Okay, this is Johnny Moore in London.
And hi, I'm Tom Goriello in New York.
And this is Thomas Metz-Mikefield in Copenhagen.
Thanks for joining us for this podcast. We decided to have a conversation today about the effect of the internet and its use of imagery and how that's changing the way that we think and connect with each other. I'm partly inspired to raise this as a subject by a post my friend Alan Moore made about a book called The Goddess and the Alphabet, or was it The Alphabet and the Goddess, which claimed, amongst other things, that over the past 50 years, not just the internet, but things like television, mean that we as human beings are processing more thinking in images, and that this is having a profound effect on our culture. The author even suggests that it's feminizing our culture. He suggests that in ancient times, before alphabets were created, there were goddess cults, and he claims that historically the cults of goddesses died out at about the same time that the alphabet was introduced. It's quite a radical idea. So I'd been reading about that book when I ran into Thomas again about a month ago at a conference and found out from you, Thomas, some of the really interesting ways in which the package you've been working on has been affecting people. So, Thomas, maybe you could tell us a bit more about what your recent experience has been and why it's of special interest to you.
A couple of years ago, we launched a photo sharing service called 23, and then the last about 12 to 18 months, I guess both of us sort of started thinking about how organizations could use these tools, but also we started seeing weird sort of photo sharing accounts with lettuce heads and, you know, all this, where it's like, you know, okay, this is for real, you know, this is not just people sharing private photos on the net, etc. So I think it's interesting that images and photos are so kind of undervalued in our culture and as a communication tool, and we're seeing this explosion now where we have the capability for direct visual authentic communication, whereas earlier it's only been sort of the advertising and marketing and media industries that's really been sort of capturing and using the visual angle.
Very interesting. And Thomas, I'm definitely going to have to get you to explain about the lettuce head pictures that you were talking about. But before you do that, let's get talk to Tom for a bit, because Tom, you've also been experimenting more with the image size of the internet.
Yes.
Than I have. I've just been a regular blogger with the odd picture stuck in, whereas you're an early adopter of vlogging or video blogging. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it's interesting. I started blogging roughly 3 years ago now, and I started pretty early on in my blogging, decided that every Friday I wanted to feature an image on my blog just as a way to really spur my own thinking. So I would, you know, snap the odd shot here or there of something that just caught my eye. Then a little over, just about a year ago now, I became really fascinated with what was going on YouTube, and very quickly went from being a lurker to being a producer of videos, and just have found that to be a fascinating experience from many, many different dimensions. And so I now spend a good deal of my creative blogging time doing video blogs. Mostly I've found the interactive aspect of video blogging, such as it is, to be such as it is, because it's still, of course, asynchronous, you know. But yet I find it to be a more highly interactive method of communicating than regular text blogging has been.
What are you thinking on the subject of organizational use of images?
Myself, I think that because organizational speech is so often devoid of emotion, that images enable intra-organizational communicators, people trying to, you know, influence others within the organization, it enables them to be able to bring emotional valence, you know, some emotional power to the stories and messages that they're trying to tell inside the organization, much like designers do. So, you know, whereas designers are constantly using imagery to bring emotion into the discourse that they're creating, the rest of the organization speaks in these kinds of, you know, words and numbers, you know, really devoid of emotion, and that's the impact that they have, the emotionless kind of impact, you know, the kind of dreaded PowerPoint hypnosis that takes place.
I think it's very interesting, sort of the cultural aspect of, you know, we shape our tools and then our tools shape us. Whereas, you know, these tools, you can even talk about sort of having a visual strategy.
Yes.
What will your company be about when you have actual customers using actual products on your homepage, or when you're discussing product development that you have photos of actual customers in actual variety of the situations using the products, or you just have the CEO's latest photo block to keep up to date about what he's doing or whatever he's thinking, and I think it's therefore that this sort of the image, the visual area is so interesting that, you know, at least my current belief is that it might even become that the entry barrier to sort of the participatory age here is could be even more, you know, photo blocking, visual blocking, video blocking, than actual text blocking, because, you know, you can easily add a photo block to even a corporate boring homepage.
Yes.
You know, that'll be a very easy start to, you know, get going in terms of getting authentic and getting real. Whereas, you know, some of the other, you know, real blogging sort of has a, you know, finding your own voice and all that is, you know, is a bit harder to some regard. But
yes,
it's interesting, you know, what will it mean when you have an actual archive of thousands of photos that you can use in your presentations and your annual reports and all that are, you know, real and authentic. That's very interesting.
I think that by opening up the visual channel, I think we do add an enormous amount of texture to our relationships with each other. And I think we increase kind of a lot of bandwidth that we don't notice, that we haven't been using when we're in the culture that you talked about, Tom, which is all about reports and PowerPoints. It's a very sort of desiccated way in which businesses try and language the way that they're experiencing the world. And then you suddenly introduce an image, and it feels to me like we open up a lot more of that much more kind of animal bandwidth that exists between people. When I'm facilitating, I'm aware of there's so much communication going on between people that is not going to be captured on, for example, a transcript of the conversation that goes way beyond the tone of voice to all the subtle visual communication that takes place.
I certainly couldn't agree more. And, you know, part of what we were interested in doing was in bringing that set of communication channels into the business discourse, which currently are outside the business discourse and are it's part of what makes business discourse feel so flat.
I think it's interesting also, Jenny, to go back to your point before about sort of the bandwidth of the visual medium that, you know, we've been having a small communications agency, about five people, where the CEO has been having a photo block the last year, and he's probably shot, I can't, you know, whatever, 500-600 photos or something, you know, with visual observations. Basically, the employees back at the office could see what the guy was doing, and what was interesting was then a couple of weeks ago that they had a girl that went for an interview for a new job, and she had basically, you know, looked through his 500-600 photos during the last year, and had basically sort of deconstructed the whole company in terms of the culture and everything. And a couple of weeks later, after she had been hired, she went to a workshop with us, where, you know, just based on the actual sort of small weak signals of all the visual imagery, she gave an explanation of my relationship to the CEO of the small communications agency based on on the visual images she had seen of me in the photos and the context, whether it was in an office or in a cafe or whatever it was. And this sort of leads to an interesting point of sort of like we're seeing at the moment with signaling with Twitter, that you know, yes, that the value of all these small signals and for organizational use, that really becomes this sort of intimate sphere around us that leads to the actual sort of conversations, meaningful conversations about sort of interesting or important subjects.
I was just going to say, it really gives legitimacy to a whole new set of skills that shed light on things that we never thought we would be able to learn about in that way. Could you imagine someone telling the story that you just told, Thomas, about being able to learn about organizational culture and relationships by deconstructing a set of images? There is a skill, a skill set there that will need to be nurtured in most people, but having someone who's already good at it really kind of gives a great beacon for people to look at and say, look, this is possible.
I wonder if it does require much of a skill set. I mean, what I was going to say was, thinking of Thomas's story, you know, most of us, I think, could see a picture of Thomas with this business colleague, and we'd look at how they were dressed and what their body language was and how their facial expressions were in a couple of pictures. And I think most people would be able to build a pretty rich picture of what their relationship would be like that would never, for example, be conveyed in an organizational diagram, which might then show Thomas as having, a dotted line relationship with this guy. And one of them would be in a square box, another in a round one, and one box would be higher than another. That visual image would immediately convey more.
Yeah, I think you touch a very interesting subject there, that, you know, that these visual images, you know, just have so much bandwidth and tells us so much. And I don't know, you know, we communicated visually before having text, you know, and we, you know, we experience the world visually on a daily basis. So on that level, you know, there's nothing really new here. I guess we're sort of old concepts in a new context is the distribution and the ability to capture, you know, it's world changing that we have, you know, the video of the hanging of Saddam Hussein, et cetera, you know, we have all these examples on the global agenda of just, you know, visual capturing and visual sharing, sort of, you know, taking down the barriers of having sort of divided worlds and getting the truth out there, et cetera. And I guess, yeah, it's sort of to some extent somewhat the same for the organizational use.
Yes, I think, Johnny, to your point, the while the everyday use of these skills is something that we're all intimately familiar with operationally because we use them every day, legitimizing them within a business context is a whole other matter, isn't it?
I think the root concern for business, as I guess with a lot of things that are emerging out of the web at the moment, is that there'll be the challenge absolutely of legitimizing it in businesses that will be quite upset by the organogram, PowerPoint presentation, thick report deliverables-led approach, yeah, are going to find this challenging. But if they don't respond to it, then it's just going to carry on and organize itself without them. And in terms of the iconography, Thomas, you've just mentioned the hanging of Saddam Hussein. There's so much iconography around the situation in Iraq. I mean, I'm just thinking today, as we record this, the Iranians have announced that they're going to release the 15 British hostages they've been holding. And I'm thinking about the power of the visual imagery of the pictures of those hostages that they've released, where I think they've been quite artful. They're showing them casually attired, and today they've been shown in suits. And risking a tiny bit of controversy here, compare that with the iconography of the orange jumpsuit that is kind of the icon for how Americans treat their military prisoners. There's an enormous amount of information conveyed in just those two contrasting images.
Yes, I think we are nowhere near as clever in the use of images in that sense as others have been. I think one of the lessons of this new way of engaging in conflict is that our expertise at the Americans' expertise at producing commercial images has not yet translated into expertise in producing images.
Wasn't there something about when Bush announced that the war had been won on an aircraft carrier, exactly, yeah. That was
absolutely
a pretty strong visual image.
Awful, yeah. Just awful, and awful. Yes, it just shows how juvenile our use of those images is. I mean, even, for example, one thing that's happened here in the United States is that now every politician stands in front of kind of an LED board that has sort of words, you know, death tax cut, made permanent is now sort of there in the background. And it just makes for a bizarre image. So compare that with, the image of Osama bin Laden walking through the hills, with a shepherd's staff, and an AK-47 strapped around his shoulder, a very different image. And I think, I think we're losing that part of this battle.
And it's there feels like there's a thing about production values that's kind of been turned on their head, at least for the time being. So if we take the aircraft carrier scene, maximum production values, right? But the YouTubes that go around, it's almost like the crudeness and the roughness of them almost becomes part of their appeal. It becomes their badge of authenticity.
I just had a conversation at lunch with a woman who is launching a new brand of personal care products, which have somewhat of a luxury dimension to them. And she was wanting to be very careful about having high level of production value in any video that they would produce, and I was arguing just the opposite, Johnny, more like what you were saying, that, you don't want it to look necessarily homemade, by two kids with a video phone, but you do want it to have you want to be able to distinguish it from an infomercial.
Yeah. Hugh McLeod writes about what he calls dinosaur speak to capture the kind of verbal diarrhea that we get from companies when they talk about themselves in a very formal way that we don't really believe. It doesn't have the rough edges that real human conversation has. And I think there's a visual equivalent of dinosaur speak, dinosaur look, if you like. The standard stock photographs of grinning men and women in business suits gathered around a table smiling at each other. It's kind of reminiscent in its way of the absurd poses of models in underwear catalogs. And all of that, I think, is kind of going out the door now in favor of, because I think that's part of the richness of the visual image. I think our eyes can spot the fakeness of that at 100 paces now.
To me, it's also about sort of, the conscious process all these images have been through, whereas, what you described, that the actual sort of gonzo shot taken with a mobile phone or whatever, has never been, that's sort of just a very sort of authentic, caught in the moment, visual observation or whatever it is. Whereas all the other imaging we used to do on a daily basis, have been, focus grouped, etc. But if I could just stress one other interesting point, it would be that I think there's also some interesting stuff about sort of our ability to consume a lot of imagery. That sort of, once again, sort of puts things sort of top down or the other way around. If I can scan 5,000 photos a day, including the visual and the text description of the photo, which I could do in 10 minutes, what does that mean for our organization and for sort of our expert systems and our relationship to decisions, et cetera, if I'm really able to sort of, be in there and in all the context, the expert sitting somewhere in the globe, being able to look at all x-rays across the globe or, buildings across the globe, et cetera. So I think the visual sharing aspect here really sort of transcends sort of our sort of organizational decision making and our capabilities to stay up to date with a lot of stuff.
Yes, it's kind of a further acceleration on top of everything else of the ability of ordinary people basically to piece together enormous amounts of complex information. Bypassing standard organizational structures a lot of the time.
Yes, especially when we open that up. When we open up the conversation with our entire network of people who are interested in our business and invite both the contribution of images and the reflection on images, and ask those people, well, what do you think this is? You know, we are now, you know, we now have the benefit and also the bane, because there's so much of it, of all of these different perceptions about imagery that it's a new source of, it's a new source of material that we have to make that has to provide us with meaning somehow.
And of course it means that individuals are so much less in control of their image than they used to be as well. So if I refer back to my dinosaur photographs, my underwear pose photographs, as it were, of corporate executives, everywhere they go now, people will be taking pictures of them with their mobile phones and mobile cameras. So there'll be a lot more less flattering images passing around of you now.
Go on, Tom. I was just going to say the American political campaign, which we are already in the hot and heavy midst of because of all the fundraising that has to happen so early in our presidential campaign, is really highlighting some of the differences between the candidates in terms of their comfort with candor, visually and verbally. Mm. So Hillary Clinton, for example, who is extremely adept at expressing herself in relatively formalized settings, comes across as, at least the way I see her being perceived, as being relatively stiff when compared with someone like either John Edwards or Barack Obama, for example.
And Thomas, I'm dying to hear more about the lettuce heads that you were telling us about.
Sure. Well, the story was that we had this photo sharing, you know, this photo blog with you know, somebody uploading about 200 or 300 photos a day of letter sets. And we were like, you know, what is this? And it all had dates on it, and sometimes it had sizes on it and stuff like that. And then in the end, we emailed them and then realized that it was a huge Californian organic letterhead producer called Church Brothers that on themselves, you know, just to figure out that they could use a photo block to do quality assurance. So each day they'll upload, you know, photos of today's batch, and now they've even extended it with another photo sharing account where they take sample photos of what they have for sale today. So their salespeople will tell their customers, you know, go to our website, then you can see the actual quality I'm selling you today. You know, don't believe what I'm telling you. You can see the actual quality and sizes and et cetera that we have. So I think that it's this wonderful story about, you know, two very sort of very core business processes about quality assurance and sales being augmented by visual sharing very easily. And, you know, they came up with it themselves and, you know, just have operationalized the process of somebody in the field taking photos and sending them to an email address that posts the photos to the web. So it's all very easy, but it's sort of it's an icon for me of what is to yet to come.
Okay, guys, I'm gonna call it a day there.
Sounds great.
And thanks for playing, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, let's do it another time.
Let's do it again soon.